TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Farms and Genetic Engineering, Percy Schmeiser and Bill Wenzel. Scientists from an agricultural research center in Oaxaca went to Zapotec Indian villages in late November 2000 to collect some of the pure organic corn growing there. The Sierra Norte Mountains in Mexico are considered the cradle of civilization for the 4,000-year-old corn plant. As they moved from plot to plot, they made a frightening discovery. In these small Indian villages, 3 hours away from the state capital of Oaxaca, in Mexico, a country that has banned the planting of genetically modified crops, they found that all but 2 fields were contaminated with genetically modified corn. The researcher Francisco Chapelle says that when they analyzed the corn samples, it contained a genetic marker commonly used in engineered plants. Francisco's brother, the UC Berkeley scientist Ignacio Chapelle, later published the results in the magazine Nature. Francisco Chapelle is worried that genetically modified strains could displace or contaminate Mexico's genetic treasure of over 60 corn varieties, a wealth that enriches staple crops worldwide and includes wild varieties that have yet to be cataloged. However, U.S. grain growers are not worried by the contamination. Far from fearing to be held responsible for the pollution of the Zapotecan crops, they even want to charge Mexican farmers for the invasion. Ricardo Selma, head of the U.S. Grain Council's Mexico office, said, "We want the patent rights of the owners of that genetic modification to be honored," end of quote. And under NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, these rights might actually be enforceable. And here is where the case of the contamination of the Zapotecan corn connects up to today's story. The Canadian canola grower Percy Schmeiser is already being sued by Monsanto for some Roundup-ready canola that has contaminated his fields. Percy Schmeiser is a 70-year-old Saskatchewan farmer, former mayor and former member of parliament. He and his wife have been breeding canola for over 50 years. In May of 2001, a Canadian judge found him guilty of violating the patent rights of Monsanto. The judge said it did not matter how the seeds got onto Schmeiser's land, whether it was by pollen drift, by seeds carried by wind or birds, or dropped from passing trucks. The fact that some Roundup-ready canola plants were found interspersed with his own variety was enough to support the claim that Monsanto now owned all of Schmeiser's harvest of that year, even from plots that were not contaminated. Percy Schmeiser appealed this ruling, and in May of 2002 his appeal will be heard. In the meantime, he has been trying to eradicate Monsanto's canola in the contaminated areas of his farm and found that to be impossible because the Monsanto canola has become a super weed. You can go to his website at percyschmeiser.com, Schmeiser with an S-C-H, and see photos he has taken before and after he sprayed the canola with a very potent chemical recommended by Monsanto. The Monsanto plants survived. This story is just unfolding and needs your attention. There is the specter of biopollution, of ownership of polluted plants by the polluter, and of farmers having serious problems to get rid of engineered plants. First, you will hear from Percy Schmeiser. He had come to San Diego right after his trial ended in May 2001 and was given a standing ovation by the audience to the Beyond Biodevastation conference. Percy Schmeiser.
Friends, indeed a pleasure for me to come to San Diego from Saskatchewan. I'm known as a seed developer and a seed saver. So people that don't know, in regards to canola, canola is a cooking oil. It's processed, and the meal from that is used for animal feed, such as for hogs and for cattle. What has happened to me? In 1998, Monsanto laid a lawsuit against me. And this in their lawsuit is, this is what they said, or filed against me, that I had illegally grown Roundup Ready Monsanto canola without a license, that I illegally obtained it from another farmer, I stole it from a seed house, or obtained it in some other illegal way, and that I had infringed on their patent by growing it. My wife and myself, who helped me develop our own canola over these many years, sat down and said, we have done nothing wrong. We have never purchased your seed, and it came into our land either by cross-pollination, direct seed movement, by birds, bees, animals, you name it. And so we decided to stand up to Monsanto. And I can tell you, it has not been easy. We then launched a counter lawsuit against Monsanto, which has not been, it has been filed, but not has proceeded as yet, because the one had to precede the other one. And we said, you destroyed our crop, you've contaminated our land, is what basically, and you put something in the environment you could not control. In 1997, 1998, it came out in the trial that Monsanto had illegally went on my land that I farm without my knowledge, without my permission, and I can say that they trespassed and they stole my seed and plants. I was never with them. So it's only what they said, that they went on the land that I farm. Now, in the pre-trial, Monsanto then withdrew all their allegations that I had illegally obtained your seed, because they had absolutely no proof. No one had ever indicated, and their files showed, I had never ever bought Monsanto seed. So they withdrew all those allegations, but they said it did not matter because there was some in my ditch around the power poles, and it didn't matter how it got there. I infringed on their patent, even though they contaminated my land. And it's almost bizarre. So anyway, it went to court in June of 2000. But before I go to that trial, I'd like to mention that we have found that canola, which is a light seed and similar to soybeans and corn and cotton, it can spread by cross-pollination, but in our country with canola, with high winds, it's primarily by direct seed blown from another's farmer's land, farm machinery, trucks that haul canola. And in wintertime, an ice-covered snow, a canola seed blown off a truck can probably drift 20 miles. So there is no safe distance. It can move an area that is hard to determine. Now, what did Monsanto do? And why did farmers sign a contract? In 1996, Monsanto said to farmers in Saskatchewan, and similar to farmers in North Dakota, Montana, who grew soybeans, that this new canola was higher yielder, it was more nutritious, and you would use less chemicals. And I think it was the last point, use less chemicals, is what caught the farmer's eyes. Because in the grain-growing area of Western Canada, we were using herbicides by the tons. It was coming out of our ears for the last 50 years. What has happened since 1996? Within 4 years, we found that it was not more nutritious, because a gene that keeps the plant from dying from glyphosate, which is Roundup, doesn't make the plant more nutritious. It was not a bigger yielder. In fact, it was a poorer yielder. And on top of that, farmers are now using 6 to 10 times more chemicals to control it, because it has now become a super weed. Because in a canola plant that cross-pollinates with other companies' genetic altered canola, you can have up to 3 genes in one plant, and you now have a super weed, which Monsanto says, no problem, we now have a new super chemical to kill it. So That is only one part, and I have to speak quite fastly. They got farmers to sign contracts, and I believe it's one of the most repulsive contracts that a farmer has ever signed, or anyone has ever signed in their life. And what it did was this. You had to sign the contract, you never could use your own seed the following year. You had to sign that you pay $15 an acre if you wanted to grow it again, or a technology charge each year that you want to grow it. You had to sign the contract that said that you allow Monsanto's police force to come on, give them permission, come on your land with or without permission for 3 years after you grew it. Go in your granaries, go on your land, and check to see if you're cheating or not. You had to buy their chemicals, and you had to buy their seed again the following year if you want to use it. Now, I'll give you an example. If you want to could use your own seed on the market, you get about $5.50 for a bushel of canola Canadian. When you went back to buy Monsanto, the seed from Monsanto the following year, if it was traded, you paid $170 a bushel. So talk about a ripoff. They buy your seed for $5.50, sell it back to you for $170. Now, in their policy also, they advertise in this brochure of theirs that if you thought that your neighbor was growing Roundup Ready genetic altered canola without a license, you should rat or squeal on them. And if you did, you would get either a leather jacket from Monsanto or you would get free chemicals. Now just stop and think about what that would do. They had their police force, and in our area they had 35 former Royal Canadian Mounted Police on their investigation team. So they would go out to farmers and say, we have a tip or a rumor. You're growing genetic altered canola without a license. And the farmer would say, no, I'm not. And they say, you're lying, we'll get you. The time we're through with you, you won't have a farm left. So it was total intimidation, harassment. And I had lady farmers that phoned me up and they were crying over the phone. And they said they had this harassment. Now, when these investigators and police left this farm, can you imagine what they think? Because these former ex-police officers would say, we're former police officers, and the farmer would only not hear the ex and only hear the police. And they say, well, we have this tip and rumor. Well, when these police left, a farmer would think, well, who squealed on me or who did this to me? And naturally, he would think of his neighbor. You can see how that has broken down our social fabric of our farm communities. And I think that this is one of the worst things that has happened, is the working together of communities to Monsanto, who wants to bring farmers down to their low-level, gutter-type policy. And I think it's just unforgivable. What else did they do? They sprayed farmers' field to see if it was growing Roundup canola by helicopter, by spray bombs from the air. So it was just a total harassment of farmers. Okay, what in the court, what did the judge rule? He ruled that it does not matter how it got onto my land. It was immaterial. The fact that there were some plants on my land, regardless of how it got there, I infringed on their patent. If my regular canola plant, conventional canola plant, was cross-pollinated with Monsanto's Roundup Ready canola plant, my plant become their property. And if you just stop and think the implications of that, of any bird, plant, tree, flowers, all it has to do is get cross-pollinated, it becomes Monsanto's property. All my profits from my 1998 crop goes to Monsanto, even from the fields that did not show any of Monsanto in, because the judge ruled, because I used my own seed, there was a probability there could be some in. So if I had 1% in, they could take they're taking the profits from my 99% of my other crop. I have filed an appeal that the judge erred in many facts of law. In closing, I'd like to say this. Patent laws on foods and plants unless controlled, is and will be the curse of humankind. Remember, all seeds, whether plants, animals, fish, birds, insects, human beings, are the creation of life. Never let anyone take that right away from you. Why am I and my wife fighting back? I'm 70 years of age. How many good years do I have left? I have 5 children and 14 grandchildren. And I don't want to leave a legacy of land and food with poisons. I want to leave a legacy to them of a land and food without poisons. Thank you.
That was the Canadian canola farmer, Percy Schmeiser. Please lend him your support and attention. He's doing this for us. Please visit his website at www.percyschmeiser.com. Schmeiser is spelled S-C-H-M-E-I-S-E-R. That's percyschmeiser.com. The next speaker is Bill Wenzel. He's an attorney with a farmer-to-farmer campaign. He says that the effort to replace natural varieties with genetically modified seeds is really a campaign to put family farmers out of business. Here is Bill Wenzel.
I really appreciate everybody being here in the audience. A lot of times you go around, and our focus in the farmer-to-farmer campaign is pretty clearly to talk to other farmers about these same problems, the problems of liability, the problems of contamination, the problems of trying to preserve identity of seeds that many farmers want to grow and are finding it increasingly impossible to meet. Clearly, this country is way behind the times, and it's only for us coming together and working hard that we can close the marketplace to GMOs in this country and basically get to where Europe and Asia are right now. When you and I as non-farmers sit down and think about GMOs, our real fears on food security and impact on the farmers, and that the farmers here very much share those concerns. And what the industry is really trying to do is contaminate the entire grain production system in this country and around the world before the real dangers and threats the GMOs pose can be discovered and made light of. That is basically what the industry's approach is here and what we're trying to counter in the farmer-to-farmer campaign. Farmers have been under financial siege for the last 3 decades. Ever since the mid-80s, virtually every commodity has been hit with rock-bottom prices that are forcing family farmers out and into bankruptcy by the score. And farmers for over that period of time have said, look, you know, your only salvation here in the way to profitability is to become more efficient and produce more and at the same time be more competitive in the global marketplace. So let's use the industry analysis to see what that means in terms of GMOs and how we're organizing around these issues when farmers talk to farmers. As Bill pointed out, GMOs cost more. There was a study done in 1999 that looked at the cost of Roundup Ready soybeans, and they found that for a full program, the cost was $68.77 per acre, which is roughly 50% more than what it costs for a full seed and weed management system using conventional varieties. So that argument is out that using GMOs is going to cost you less. What about the argument that GMOs are going to produce you more? Well, that has clearly been thrown out by a number of studies. In terms of Roundup Ready soybeans, Nebraska has done a study which was published in August of 2000 that found that those soybeans yielded 11% less than conventional soybean varieties. The same was true in a USDA study on GMO cotton, and we found that there was 12% less yield on the GMO varieties, and on canola, such as grown in the northern plains and up in Canada where Percy's from, a study comparing GMO and conventional seeds found a 20% yield difference between GMOs and the conventional seed varieties. So that has clearly that particular argument for use of GMOs from an economic analysis goes right by the wayside. Another big factor, and one that is probably as important or more important than anything else in terms of pure economics, is the loss of markets and an inability to compete if you don't raise GE-free products in a global agricultural economy. Basically, as I think all of the speakers have pointed out, is that when consumers and farmers get together and press the point that they don't want, will not use, and have no time whatsoever for GMO products, that governments and industry have to respond. We've seen that happen in Europe and Asia, where consumers raised up, demanded GE-free products. As a result, there are many markets there that are closed to GMO products and clearly put American farmers at a disadvantage. Just some statistics that are as recent as I could gather before coming here. In terms of corn, Japan, Taiwan, and South Korea have imported 88.5 million bushels less corn this year than at the same time last year. Another statistic is that in 1995-1996 marketing year in the European Union, there were 109 million bushels of U.S. corn that were imported, and this is prior to the time that GMOs came into the marketplace. Overall, they still import over 100 million bushels of corn, but most of that now is GE-free corn coming from Brazil, China, and Australia. Soybeans is another situation. Although we still have a good and viable market for soybeans in many countries, the fact is that a lot of those soybeans are used for animals and animal feed. And increasingly, although those are not regulated now, there's increasingly a concern and an interest and a desire to develop markets for GE-free feed to be used on, for animals. And that's being pointed out by some of the most recent market statistics. Last year, there was literally no demand for GE-free soybeans to be used for animal feed. Now, almost 20 to 25% of the market for those products is in GE-free, and in order to be certified for that, the countries basically have to prohibit and ban the use of Roundup Ready soybeans. Again, Brazil is the big winner, and this is another market that is totally shut off to the American farmer. Increasingly, it's becoming very difficult to even raise GE-free products. And you just have to think about what goes on in the grain production system in order for that to really become come and hit you at home. You have to make sure that, number one, you get certified GE-free seed from the beginning. You have to do your utmost to make sure that your land is not contaminated by drift from neighbors who are using GMOs, and in terms of soybeans and corn, those statistics are quite high. A majority of farmers use soybeans that are GMOs, and about 25% of the corn producers do. So that's a problem. And then you have to make sure as the grain is harvested that your harvesting equipment is totally free of any type of contamination from GMOs, and that the truck that picks it up at your place and drives it to the processor is equally been cleaned out and certified as being free of any GMOs. And lastly, you have to make sure that the processor has totally segregated the GMOs from the GE-free products in order to keep the certification. So it's a very difficult task for the American farmer to now grow and raise and market GE-free products. Farmers came together 3 years ago at the Farm Aid concert and held a biotech summit to basically talk about these issues to other farmers and begin the education process. From that came a declaration, Farmers Declaration on Genetic Engineering and Agriculture. And I'll just read a couple of the demands that the farmers are making as a prerequisite for other member organizations to join them in this fight against GMOs. Demand a suspension of all further environmental releases and government approvals of genetically engineered seeds and agricultural products. Demand an immediate and independent and comprehensive assessment of social, environmental, health, and economic impacts of genetically engineered seeds and agricultural products. Demand a ban on the ownership of all forms of life, including a ban on patenting of seeds, plants, animals, genes, and cell lines. And the list goes on. These are the things that farmers are fighting for that are involved in this campaign. We've been able to get 33 farm organizations and sustainable agriculture groups from across this country to join us in this fight. We put together a national advertising campaign that we played to, on farm radios and in the ag press across this country, and did an ad to counter all of the propaganda of the biotech industry, and it forced the biotech industry to respond to our charges. We're going to keep up that fight. We're going to increase our organizing. We're going to develop more farmer leaders over the course of this year. You've met three of some of the most outstanding members of that group here today. We're building an army. We need your help. Let's go down the road together and win this war.
That was Bill Wenzel, attorney with a farmer-to-farmer campaign. The three farmers he's referring to are producing milk, soy, corn, and canola. All are warning us of the danger of genetically modified crops. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on family farms and genetic engineering on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get a copy of the full one-hour program, Family Farms and Genetic Engineering, online or by calling TUC Radio. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Mariah Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.